Mita?
Okay, we're good.
We're good? Ready to go? Well, welcome everybody to the Senate Committee on Business and Transportation. For the record, it's March 22nd, 2017. We got a number of bills today, and let's see, we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 849. We'll do that. And Patrick?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 849 permits an individual to create a first-time homebuyer savings account with a financial institution to pay or reimburse a qualified beneficiary's eligible costs for first-time purchases of single-family residence. It allows the subtraction of amounts contributed to the account during each tax year from the account holder's federal taxable income. It exempts the amount of interest and other income earned on the account from taxation, and it specifies that withdrawals from purposes other than the approved purposes are taxable income to the account holder and establishes the amount of time limitations and subtraction and exemptions from the taxable income. The measure applies to tax years beginning on or after January 1st, 2018, and before January 1st, 2024. The measure would take effect on the 91st day following adjournment sine die. This measure comes to us with a subsequent referral to the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee, Mr. Chair.
Welcome, Senator Haas. I think it's the first time you've been in front of our committee.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Very diverse committee of yours.
What do you mean by that?
Yeah, explain that.
My name is.
Do we take offense or not?
That's the gray hair.
Mark Haas, Oregon State Senate, District 14. I'm happy to be here and promote a bill that will nudge people, particularly young people, towards buying a home. I have prepared remarks here that I put into the record and handed out, and I won't read it into the microphone, even though I know how much you love it when people do that. But I think what the real goal here is to increase home ownership. There's research out there that shows that when that happens, communities become stronger, neighborhoods become stronger. It helps when people put down roots like that. It helps build communities. This bill says individual filers may deduct up to $5,000 per year, joint filers $10,000 into an account for a deduction here. And we need to do something because of the home prices. My first home that I bought in 1985 was $45,000. And today that's a down payment for a middle-class size home in Portland. And so, like I said, I think we need to nudge them forward. You will hear from some advocates here today who will tell you more about the mechanics of how this will work. And on that, I'm very intrigued because, as you might note, this has a subsequent referral to the Senate Revenue Committee. I'm on that committee. I know guys there. And I will be interested in pursuing it after you folks vet it and work it over here.
Gee, if you hadn't put the subsequent on it, we could just pass it to the floor and got on with it.
Well, thank you, Chair Beyer. Vice Chair Thompson, Mark Meek, State Representative for House District 40, and I am very excited to be in front of this committee today for this to introduce Senate Bill 849. As a realtor and somebody that both helps first-time home buyers and folks, you know, buy and sell their homes, this is, I think, a very vital function of helping families really secure their future and also secure their future payments. But as you all know, buying a home can be a very daunting task, and coming up with that down payment or even setting the disciplines that is necessary to become a homeowner, like saving and preparing, all those things go into being a good, responsible homeowner. And I think this bill will do a lot to help some of our younger folks. And let me just interject this. One of my oldest first-time homebuyers was 65. And it was fantastic to be able to walk him through that process. And so first-time homebuyer doesn't have to be age-limited. And so I think this is a fantastic opportunity for us to with this housing crisis and in the middle of, you know, trying to do more, gives us an opportunity to do something positive that will allow other folks to put some money away and allow them this tax deduction. I know it may hit the revenue a little bit, but I think it's very valuable. And part of the savings will also, you know, help them to cover their closing costs, et cetera. What I like about this program is that over the 10-year process, they could save up to $50,000 to make the down payment. And if somebody has the goal of that, right now, for example, to get an FHA home, it's 3.5%. And it's barely impossible to buy a first-time home for under $300,000. So that you're looking at least with 3.5%, close to $10,000 or $11,000 just for a down payment, just to get into an FHA loan, and then another $6,000 or $7,000 additional for closing costs and or prepaid items. So Senate Bill 849 will allow an individual or a guardian to open up a bank account where deposits and earned interest are exempt from the tax, and individual couples could save up to $50,000 over a 10-year period, like I mentioned before. As a realtor, as a homeowner, as a father, and now a lawmaker, I see great potential for this tool to help our Oregonian families to really get that step up and a hand up. And I look forward to working with the Senate and Senator Haas here to make sure, see what we can do to bring this program around. Thank you very much for your time today.
Senator Haas, sir, question. Now, is this like the 527, does this allow a deduction from the federal income tax as well, or is it just state?
State. I believe it's just state.
Just state? Oh, that's too bad. Senator.
Yeah, I have a question. Is there ever a time when we would recoup the taxes that we lost? For example, say that they bought a house and then flipped it and then cashed out within a year or something like that. Obviously, that's not what we wanted to be doing. So is there any precautions so that we would recoup the money at a later date?
Senator Gerard, that's a good question. I think the answer is no, but it is limited to first-time home buyers.
I got that.
Generally, people in that category are not first-time home buyers.
Yeah, okay. I think it's a great bill.
I do too.
I was just kind of curious as to the specifics.
Yeah, and Chair Beyer and Senator Gerard. Yeah, and just for example, part of the, and I'm not an accountant, so I always have to tell myself, my clients, that I'm not an accountant. But if you do not live in that home for at least 2 years, you have to pay full capital gains on that. So for sure, they would be in at least for 2 years if they're going to be a smart first-time home buyer. And my guess is, on average right now, most home buyers in this current market are living in their homes for at least 9 years. Back in 2005, it was more like six. So because of the fluctuation in the recession, they're a little longer period of time. Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Chair.
Other questions? Thank you, Senator. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Sean?
Good afternoon, Senator Beyer, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Sean Cleve, today representing the Oregon Association of Realtors and the Oregon First Time Home Coalition, which includes the Oregon Home Builders Association and the Oregon Community Credit Unions Association. I'm here today to support Senate Bill 849. Homeownership trends to provide wealth and accumulation for homeowners. As of 2013, the average homeowner had $195,000 in accumulated wealth compared to renters on average of $5,400. Research shows that children of homeowners do better in school. That means higher test scores and lower antisocial behaviors and lower crime and drug rates. Homeowners are more likely to be involved in their community and engage in civic activities. And first-time home buyers are especially important to the lifeblood of the housing market. They provide necessary occupations when somebody is moving up to their second home. So they fulfill a really important part of the housing economy. Home ownership has been saving for your first-time home is demonstrated to be the number one obstacle for home ownership. In 2005, 63% of Oregonians were homeowners, and about 41.9% of homeowners were between the ages of 25 to 34 years old. In 2015, that number shrank down to 32%. So the number of first-time home buyers has shrank considerably. This bill is simply put in front of you to help encourage people to save. It does have a federal deductibility of up to $5,000 for single filers and $10,000 joint. It does provide an incentive through Oregon's income tax code. As you are all very well aware, Oregon's income tax is the second highest in the nation. It's fairly regressive. It kicks in at the second highest marginal rate, exceptionally low. So this is a very strong incentive. In OLIS, we do have an economic study that was commissioned by a third-party economist. She's been involved with building some models around this. For other states, the state of Colorado and the state of Montana both adopted similar programs last year. I believe the state of Iowa and the state of New York are also considering similar legislation, and we're hopeful that they will move forward as well as Oregon. So how it works, an individual or a couple can take out an account that would be at a credit union or a bank or any other financial institution. It could be taken out by a guardian on behalf of a beneficiary. However, the guardian gets no special tax treatment. Account holders would make deposits and be provided that bonus of not paying Oregon income tax on those deposits. Also, they would be able to use the federal deduction on those, so that wouldn't count for federal taxes as well. Over a 10-year period, the 10-year period is provided as an incentive to utilize the account. They can save up to $50,000. There is a penalty for withdrawal without using it for a qualifying purpose, which could be the purchase of a home, a mobile home, or a condo. And it does provide an emergency withdrawal for issues such as a medical emergency without penalty. Based on our economic analysis, we believe that over a five-year period, 3,221 first-time homebuyers would purchase. Of those, 892 would be single-person households. 2,392, or 72%, would be two-person households. It would spur the construction of at least 161 new homes, or about 5% of the purchasers. The purchasing and building of new homes generates about $61 million in economic activity through construction over that five-year period, and is estimated to create 533 new jobs through economic activity for the short term. For people who purchase new homes, there is a variety of economic activity that occurs, purchasing new cleaning equipment, purchasing a new couch, stuff like that. We estimate for each new homeowner purchasing through this program, there would be about $2,448 in new economic activity. That's a long way of saying, even though there is an estimated cost to the program, there is a financial benefit to the state through that economic activity. Those are realized through property taxes on new homes, for Washington County transfer taxes. I know I'm opening myself up to a joke there, but document recording fees, income taxes generated by workers building new homes, and income taxes generated by the increased spending. So what the benefit equates to is over a five-year period, the cost to the state is estimated to be about $3.6 million, with an economic activity generated of about $4.6 in new revenues to the state and local governments. That's a net fiscal impact of the state of about $954,000. Or in other words, for every $1 invested in this program, it's 1.26 in economic activity. Again, we estimate a little over 3,000 new homeowners will be created through the program, providing financial independence for more Oregonians and actually freeing up more additional rental units as they transition to their own homes. For those reasons we stated, in definite support of the bill today, and I would be happy to answer any questions you
Senator
might have.
Senator Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So those are all nice numbers that you quoted. I wonder who's going to build these new homes. Homes are being built about as fast as they can be built right now.
Yeah.
I don't know where that new activity is going to come from, since they're already being built as fast as possible. So you said there are going to be X number of new homes built over the next few years, and I just don't see where they're going to be. Who's going to build them?
Well, the demand would increase as and the supply would increase as demand increases. Without a program like this, you would have a slightly lesser demand. Obviously, we do have a lot of homes being put in, but we have a huge backlog of the number of homes that would have to be built. However, this program really doesn't impact that much in new house construction. Again, the economists provided that only 161 new homes out of the 3,221 purchasers would be available. For a really strong housing market, you have to have a variety of housing stock. That's rentals, that's condos, that's first-time home buyers, that's middle-class homes. Even the upper-end homes provide a filtering. As one person moves from a condo or from a rental to a condo to their first home, to a family home with three bedrooms, every step of the way opens up new opportunities. I'm not sure if I answered your question, Senator Riley, but I think that the bigger potential for, based on the economic research, is the additional spending through the larger bulk of economic activity in the bill.
Sean, this doesn't apply just to new houses.
Absolutely not.
It's just the first-time home buyer. So only qualifies for that.
Senator Beyer, Chair Beyer, you are correct. It would be the first-time home buyer that would qualify.
Let me clarify something. I asked Senator Haas if this applies to the federal taxes
yes.
as well. And I thought he said no, and I thought I heard you say yes, it does, that there's a federal program similar to the 529.
This is really modeled at the 529. The limitations would be the 10-year period, whereas the 529 for my children, we started saving at year one. For somebody to execute and maximize the $50,000, you probably wouldn't want to start an account. I think this is really modeled over kind of a millennial aged home buyer. There would be not only the tax savings for Oregon income tax, but there is a provision in the bill that allows deductibility of taxes paid on those deposits up to a maximum of $5,000 per year for an individual and $10,000 jointly.
But that's a deduction from adjusted growth income for Oregon tax purposes.
Subtraction.
That's not a deduction from federal taxes. It is a deduction.
It would be a subtraction.
All right, come on now.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. For the record, Sean Jillian's also representing the Oregon Association of Realtors. The bill makes reference to federal taxable income as far as an exclusion. That's only because we base our Oregon income taxes off of federal AGI. So there is no federal program at this point where you get that, unfortunately, but you do get the state deduction. But the reference you see to federal taxes is simply because
that's
of
that's what I thought. I didn't think
you were correct. And Senator Haas was correct.
Sorry, Senator Beyer. I misunderstood the question.
Cool. Any other questions? It took two Seans to answer the question. But.
I'm the nice Sean.
All right. Thank you very much, Sean.
Thank you.
Let's see. Center here.
Not yet, so.
Well, we'll move on. Is Ann Nessie here?
Yeah. I just have a minute because I have a 3:30.
Great. Welcome.
Welcome. I'm new. Nice to meet you all. I'm Ann Nessie, and I represent Tax Fairness Oregon. And basically, we have some issues with the bill that might need to be addressed. Regarding tax breaks for home buyers saving for a down payment, we know it's necessary. Young people need the break. But right now, because it's modeled after the 529, mostly the upper end of millennials will be getting the break. So that's not exactly good in a time where you already have a debt. So you might, our policy is to be conservative and maybe be frugal with our tax breaks and make it apply for people who really need it. The other thing is the savings program is not placed within the Treasury Department, and therefore it will have not as much oversight, and it may be difficult and expensive to start that process. So you might want to be frugal. We support instead programs that target home buyer support to low-income and minority communities managed by Oregon Housing and Community Services. And there are several bills this session that should help that too. Thank you.
Any questions? I guess the only point that I would quibble with you is I understand your comment on low-income programs, but I think most first-time buyers tend to be young and are probably in that situation where they don't have a lot of money, and this is one that helped them get to home ownership.
Right. It's just probably it's the administration that is probably the bigger thing, and the fact that you have debt already and that we might want to be frugal this year.
Okay. Thank you very much. Senator Ferrioli.
Thank you, Mr.
Chairman. Welcome.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Ted Ferrioli, District 30. I just want to put on the record that I support this First-Time Home Buyer Savings Account Act. For so many Oregonians, the idea of home equity may be the only savings opportunity they have. And, you know, it's just one of those things that this program is open to anyone who wishes to participate. It's not, the criteria have no sideboards. If you're a first home buyer, it is available to members of any ethnic, socioeconomic group, and otherwise. So, Mr. Chairman, if I may just add my support to the growing chorus of members on both sides of the aisle in both chambers, Senator Haas, Representative Meek, and others, who'd like to see this bill at least get an analysis so that it possibly can move forward. Let me please do that.
Thank you, Senator. Question? Senator?
So, not a question, perhaps, but a comment. I've been thinking this all the way through, and the young woman, yes, she is, who testified, said something that I agree with. First of all, not many people who are first-time home buyers and need to have this help will have $5,000 or $10,000 to put in a year. So it's going to be a very small amount for most people who really need this. The people who don't need it can actually put in the whole amount.
Okay, yeah. That's factual.
I just wanted to put that on the record.
Okay. Senator Monroe?
Does this bill have a subsequent?
It does.
To what?
Revenue.
To revenue. Okay.
Thank you, Senator.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, members of the committee. Thanks for your attention.
Let's see. That's all I had signed up. Does anybody else wish to testify on Senate Bill 849? You're welcome. Seeing none, we will close the public hearing on 849. We'll open a work session on Senate Bill 849.
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 849 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to Finance and Revenue.
Senator Thompson has moved Senate Bill 849 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to Finance and Revenue. Discussion on the motion. Senator?
Well, I'm going to support the motion. I remember when Billy and I got married, we had no money, neither one of us, and we both worked hard, and we saved up $750 in 2 or 3 years of renting an upstairs apartment, and we bought a little one-bedroom house for $7,500, and we lived there for 3 or 4 years, and then we traded our equity in on a little fourplex, and we lived in one and rented the other three, and I was off and on my way. And if I hadn't had a chance to buy that first house, I'd probably still be renting today.
I think this is a strong program that makes a lot of sense. Any other comments? Is there any objection to the motion? Seeing none, Senate Bill 849 is moved forward with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to Senate Finance and Revenue. by unanimous vote. So we'll close on that one, and we'll go back up, and we'll open. I'm sorry.
838 would be the next one, Mr. Chair.
838. Senate bill. Open a public hearing on Senate bill 838. Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 838 excludes persons who are not developers of timeshares from compliance requirements for provisions governing timeshares. The measure comes to us with no amendment. We do not, as of yet this time, Mr. Chair, have the fiscal and revenue impact statements for this bill, so it's not ready to move today. But the bill is before us, Mr. Chair, and I believe Representative Vile is here to testify on the bill.
Representative. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Chair Beyer, members of the committee. Rich Vile, House District 26. And with me at the table is Karna Gustafson. Karna and I have served for the last, I won't say because Karna looks a lot younger than I do. We've served for many decades, actually, on something called the Condominium Working Group, which is a group of lawyers, managers, volunteer homeowner association board members, et cetera, dealing with issues that work on condominium, planned community, and timeshare issues. This comes to us out of that group, and all it does is this. Right now, if a developer wants to sell a timeshare offering, he's got to register it. He's got to go through a process and get it registered. It's not clear, however, if the association forecloses or if someone else forecloses on one of those units, doesn't acquire it for the specific purpose of resale, that they don't have to go through that process of registration. It's an expensive process. Patrick talked about the fiscal issue here. The great thing about this one is it eliminates fiscal issues for the non-developer recipient of these units back, allows them to hold them, sell them, but they don't have to go through the registration process that a developer would. So it simply allows for us to recognize the non-developer's ability to take the unit back and sell it if necessary without having to go through the registration process. Very simple.
Thank you. Explain takes the unit back. So well, I sell a unit to you, you decide you don't want it, and I have to take it back?
These timeshare units...
Foreclose?
Yeah. It could be a foreclosure, could be a deed in lieu of foreclosure. Recognize that a lot of these are timeshare units where people thought they were really going to use them a lot. They decided not to use them. They don't pay their assessments. Now the homeowners association's got to at least get title back so they can sell it and start collecting assessments from somebody. It's those kinds of scenarios that we're talking about.
Okay. Senator Monroe?
Yeah, that's understandable. I have a timeshare at Eagle Crest for 1 week a year, and we have an assessment we pay every year. I think it's about $600. And if
that's
I didn't pay that, $600 for the year, and if I didn't pay that for two or three years, had a back lien, then Eagle Crest could foreclose, and they'd need to market that property again.
And we don't want them to have to go through the process of registering as a developer or declarant to do that.
Yeah, makes sense.
Makes sense. Okay. Please.
Karna Gustafson, I am an attorney. I'm from Deschutes County, so I came over here from Bend. Our office does prepare timeshare documents as well as represent timeshare associations, so I'm familiar with foreclosing on them and the association needing to resell them. When we discussed this with the Oregon Real Estate Agency, who regulates timeshares, we weren't entirely clear that an association was exempt from this process. So we did work with the Oregon Real Estate Agency as a resource. The member of the Oregon Real Estate Agency sat on our committee as a resource only to make sure he was there to answer questions, and they are not objecting to the language in front of you today.
Senator Riley?
So this is not the original developer. This is an association who took over from the developer. Is that correct?
Chair Beyer, Senator Riley, not necessarily the association who took over from the developer, but the association who has now become the entity that is responsible for management of the association, of the timeshare organization. The developer typically would have set that association up, and at this point that enough sales took place, automatically transfers.
And then moved on.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, the association's a nonprofit association. That manages the timeshares.
Got it. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Seeing none. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's all I have signed up. Is anybody else to wish to speak on this bill? Seeing none, I don't believe we can move this today. Is that correct, Patrick?
We do not have paperwork.
Looks like a good bill, though.
So we have to catch up. Paperwork has to catch up, so we will close public hearing on 838. And let's see. So we got 83.
Why don't we do 839?
Yeah,
that's the last public hearing we have.
839. So we have a public hearing on Senate Bill 839. Patrick?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 839 eliminates the registration exemption for certain trailers. We do not have an amendment for this bill, nor do we yet have the fiscal impact statement or the revenue impact statement on this measure either, Mr. Chair.
Can we move it down without that, since it's going to revenue anyway?
Oh, this one's not going to revenue, Mr. Chair. Yeah, that was 849. That's going to revenue.
Oh, I see. I'm in the wrong place. All right. So, Greg Blasher?
Blazer.
All right.
Hello, Senators.
Welcome, sir.
Thank you. I was asked to come and explain why that would be advantageous to the public. The number of trailers that are stolen in Oregon is extremely high, and part of the reason is because they're a majority of them don't need to be licensed. Adds confusion for the state patrol and other law enforcement on, you know, pulling over somebody that doesn't have a license plate, because a portion of them don't need one anyway. And so that was all that the only reason that I would be for that is that it would help slow down the theft rate on trailers.
Yes, sir. I guess I got to have you state your name for the record, please.
Oh, Greg Blazer.
Any questions? I don't see any. Thank you very much, sir. Thanks for coming. Amy?
Chair Beyer and members of the committee, Amy Joyce from the Department of Transportation. Just wanted to provide some information about what it would mean if we began registering these trailers. So today, trailers under 1,800 pounds loaded weight don't have to be registered. They're exempt. What the bill does is remove that exemption. So now these trailers would need to be registered. To get registration in Oregon, you need a title. And to get a title, you need a VIN. So what that means is that folks who own these trailers now and they're not registered, and if this were to become law, would many of them would need to be coming into the DMV. So if you buy a brand new trailer that's manufactured that way, it's probably already got a VIN on it. But many of these lower weight trailers are older. Some of them are homemade, sort of cobbled together from parts of other vehicles. So if you have a used trailer, what you're going to need to do is come to the DMV, get a VIN inspection. If the vehicle has a VIN, great. If it doesn't have a VIN, DMV is going to assign you one. If you've got one of these things that sort of cobbled together pieces of other vehicles, there might be multiple VINs on that trailer, and then folks need to go to law enforcement so law enforcement can sort out what VIN to assign that that trailer. So that's what would be involved in a person who would want to register or need to register one of these things. Our neighbors to the north, Washington State, do register these kinds of vehicles, and based on their rate of registration, we believe there are somewhere between 200,000 and 250,000 of these in Oregon. So all of those would need to come in now. and get titled, registered VIN inspections. So fees on that, total first time for, let's say it's a used trailer, you're talking about $182, and if you're in Multnomah County, fee another $38 for the Multnomah County registration fee. So that's what the bill does, and I'm happy to take any questions.
So we would have all those people who have built themselves a little trailer and has no VIN or would have to, how would you even register them if you didn't have a VIN?
Chair Beyer, if it has no VIN, then DMV somehow assigns a unique number to that and then uses that, and puts, I believe they have a sticker or something that then they place on that trailer.
What's the theory behind why some are registered and some aren't?
Oh, why the law is the way it is today? Is it your question, Chair? I don't know the answer of why that exemption exists today. It could, I suppose, be the reason that there are lots and lots of these things out there and cost some money to get them registered.
Senator Riley, do you have a question?
No, just a comment, I guess.
Okay.
So it seems to me that it, with this many of those trailers out there, there's going to be a lot of folks who don't know they have to do this. They're going to be, for years, I think, these trailers that haven't been registered that are traveling around, and it confounds me how this is actually going to work.
Okay, any other questions of Amy? Senator Monroe.
I would like to be on board with Senator Riley's remarks.
Senator Thompson, do you want to go on board too?
I'll be on board with that. I'm now waiting for the bill that we have to register our wheelbarrows.
What?
There must be a bill out there somewhere to register wheelbarrows too, then.
I hadn't thought of it.
We could amend this one.
Oh, no.
Your baskets.
Senator Dry, do you want to get in on this?
I'm staying quiet.
Okay. Thank you, Amy. Anybody else? I don't see anybody, so I think we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 839. And let's see, that's the last of the public hearing. So now we have some work sessions. I will note for the record that Senate Bill 109, we won't be working today. We have a constitutional issue with that. So we'll open a work session on Senate Bill 134. And
what do we need to run through, Mr. Chair? So Senate Bill 134, we heard this on February 22nd. It subjects motor vehicle sellers and buyers to certain conditions contingent on the lender agreement or failure to agree to purchase a retail installment contract for or lease agreement for a motor vehicle. Since we heard this bill, we have received a -1 amendment, which is an agreement between auto dealers and DOJ. The -1 amendment clarifies the charge allowed by the seller for miles traveled by the buyer who returns a vehicle due to failure of a lender to purchase a retail installment contract. With the -1 amendment, Mr. Chair, this measure has a minimal fiscal impact and no revenue impact, Mr. Chair. And I believe DOJ is in the room if the committee has any questions, and so is OADA, Mr. Chair.
Committee, is there any questions of DOJ? Seeing none, your pleasure.
They're all good.
Yeah. Sounds like we're all good.
So it's a -1 amendment, Mr. Chair.
-1.
Okay. Move the -1?
Yep.
Mr. Chairman, I move the -1 to Senate Bill 134.
Senator Thompson has moved the -1 amendment to Senate Bill 134. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there any opposition to the motion? The amendment is adopted, Senator.
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 134 with the -1 amendment to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Thompson has moved Senate Bill 134 as amended by the -1s to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion on that motion? Seeing none, is there any opposition to the motion? Seeing none, Senate Bill 134 as amended by the -1 is moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation by unanimous agreement. Senator Monroe, would you like to try that one?
Oh, sure.
All righty. We're done on that one. And we will open a work session on Senate Bill 332. Patrick?
I think
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 332, we heard this bill on the 27th of February. It allows insurers to offer certain rebates with an aggregate value that does not exceed $100 in the calendar year to insureds other than persons for whom the insurer issues a health insurance or health benefit plan. We have, Mr. Chair, a dash one amendment that specifies that prizes, wares, goods, merchandise, articles, or property may be given as a form of advertising, promotional program, or promotional material. We had this amendment at the time we heard this bill the first time, Mr. Chair, with the dash one amendment, which is the preferred amendment for the requester of the bill. The measure has no fiscal impact and no revenue impact, Mr. Chair.
All righty.
Mr. Chairman, I move the dash one to Senate Bill 332.
Senator Thompson has moved the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 332. Is there a discussion on the motion? Seeing none, is there any opposition to the motion? Okay. The dash one is adopted. Senator.
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 332 with the dash one to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Thompson has moved Senate Bill 332 as amended by the dash ones to the floor with the due pass. Discussion on the motion. Is there any objections to the motion? Record the chair is opposed. And it is passed. And who would like to carry that?
The
Senator
chair.
Riley will carry. We're closed on that. Senate Bill will open a work session on Senate Bill 344. Patrick.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 344, we heard this bill on March 1st. This is the bill that requires snowmobiles and certain ATVs to cross a highway at an intersection of more than 100 feet from an intersection. It allows road authorities to designate portions of highways as ATV access routes. At the time we heard this bill, it came to us with a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means. We have since received the Dash 1 Amendment. The Dash 1 Amendment has been worked out between Senator Farioli's office and DMV. Or ODOT, rather, I'm sorry, not DMV in this case. The Dash 1 Amendment requires persons under 18 years of age who are operators or passengers of an ATV on a public right-of-way to comply with helmet requirements. It clarifies the exemption for off-road vehicle equipment. Requirement does not apply to areas posted as closed to off-road vehicles. It also specifies the Department of the Oregon Transportation Commission, rather, is the entity authorized to designate ATV vehicle access routes in consultation with the advisory committee. It modifies the membership and duties of the advisory committee and requires operators to possess Oregon driver licenses or permits to and to wear motorcycle helmets in order to operate class 2, 3, or 4 ATVs on access routes designated by the commission.
Does it still have a subsequent referral?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will clarify. With the Dash 1 amendment, the measure has a minimal fiscal impact and a minimal revenue impact, and the Senate President has given us the authority to rescind the subsequent referral to Ways and Means based on that minimal fiscal impact.
So we need to adopt the amendment?
Adopt the Dash 1 amendment, Mr. Chair.
Dash 1. And a subsequent referral?
And then in a second motion.
No, second motion. Okay. Just adopt the motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 344.
Senator Thompson has moved the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 344. Discussion on the motion. Senator Monroe?
Yeah, can I hear from Amy? She was involved in this amendment, right?
Amy's done good work on this.
Yeah, Amy, with your input, are you in support of this bill with that amendment?
Chair Beyer and Senator Monroe, as is the usual case from agency land, we neither support nor oppose. What I can say is that this bill came out of an interim work group, a very large group, with law enforcement involvement, ODOT involvement, parks involvement, many ATV users. The base bill came out and didn't necessarily really reflect what the work group came out with. The Dash 1 with parks involvement and ODOT involvement really got us much closer to the recommendations of the work group. We are very comfortable with the Dash 1.
Thank you.
That was a long way around the horn.
I feel better when you're comfortable.
Any other questions of Amy as we ever? No? All righty. Any other discussion or comment on the Dash 1? Is there any opposition to the motion? There is none. Dash 1s are adopted. Senator.
And we're not referring it.
We're not referring it. Rescind it.
Rescind
move the bill as amended
to the floor.
Rescind the
referral. Never done that. Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 344 with a dash one amendment to the floor with a due pass and rescind the
referral.
Subsequent. Senator Thompson has moved Senate Bill 344 as amended by the dash one amendment to the floor with a due pass recommendation and has rescinded the subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Discussion on that motion. Is there any opposition to that motion? I'm missing some code here.
This is for late after the vote.
Okay.
We're doing kind of the subtle semaphore.
Does that apply to the motion we're about
to
vote?
It does not, Mr. Chairman.
It does not. Okay. So the motion is adopted by unanimous vote of the committee, and we'll let Senator Farioli carry that. So we're closed on that. We'll open on a work session on Senate Bill 645.
Senate Bill 645 expands the definition of vehicle of special interest to include Humvees. We heard this on March 8th. At the time, we were missing one piece of paperwork for that bill. We now have that piece of paperwork. We have no amendments, Mr. Chair. The measure as is has a minimal fiscal impact and a minimal revenue impact, Mr. Chair.
So this is the surplus Army property bill.
That is.
Senator.
Mr. Chairman, sorry. I move Senate Bill 645 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Thompson has moved Senate Bill 645 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Do we have any discussion on the motion? Do we have any opposition to the motion? We have none. Senate Bill 645 is moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation by unanimous vote. And a good senator from Upper Staten would like to carry it. Senator Jura. And we are closed on 645, and I think that takes us to the end of the day.
See anything else,
Mr. Chairman? Anything else for the committee? We are adjourned.